Welcome to the Hatch Podcast for Hive.
So, how would you describe yourself? Like, what do you do?
Well, I would say, I'm a poet, and I work in poetry, and all the different forms that poetry encompasses nowadays. So, you'd obviously, it's not just one thing. It's not just writing poetry. A lot of it is education work. It's performing. It's publishing. It's speaking. Working in various youth groups with institutions, so it's a whole bag of different things, but I guess everything will fall under the category of poetry. So yeah, I just keep it nice and simple and just say I write poems for a living.
Nice. So what's been your journey with words so far?
Well, it's been a very interesting one. It's been a very capricious one. It changes quite a lot, and I enjoy language, I enjoy reading, I enjoy listening and studying words and how they can be bent and shaped differently to create different ideas and images, how they sound when put up against each other. So yeah, language is a very fascinating tool. It's almost ancient, and it's something that is very malleable, so you know, it can always be changed.
Do you like studying about it?
Just the different ways in which we can create images, create sound, create movement by using something that we all have access to. It's kind of a commonality that we all have is language and words, and providing those words are understood, you can shift the context and you can play with symbolism and things like this and create a whole world, really.
Why do you think you were like so attracted to spoken poetry in like particular?
The good thing with poetry, I grew up listening to a lot of rap music and folk music, particularly those two genres. And one thing that in the early days, I always thought poetry had to rhyme. So I was writing rap songs, but I was very uncomfortable in the format of hip hop. So mainly because I don't like working in rhyme. I find it very stifling. So when I discovered performance poetry, or when I was listening to poets just stand on a stage and read out their work, communicate their work, it just opened up a whole new world for me. And I was like, okay, cool, you don't always have to do it in this way. And I didn't know that before. I think it was 2021 when I discovered you can do it. So yeah, that's kind of what made it enticing.
What do you think, like, most impacted that then?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, how you run about, you see people on stage, what do you think?
I love it. I love watching people transcend. I love watching a performance, you know, of any intensity. It doesn't always have to be loud and animated and thespian. Sometimes it can be very still and very silent and very
magical.
Magical, but also captivating and compelling.
Before you did spoken word, were you into drum and stuff at school, or did you like
that? The thing is, this is what I say, that it's not drama at all. You're not a character, so you don't adopt or embody anyone else. What it is communication and oration, and those two things together are what some people misconstrue sometimes as being your acting. When they see a lot of spoken word artists as maybe failed actors, and there are dramatic monologues, there is a branch of poetry that lends itself more to theatre and to the drama stage, but whereas I would never say what I do is theatrical in that sense, you know. Like, you just try and find the music and a voice that can really enhance what it is that you're saying. And that's it. It doesn't really get more thought out than that.
So, like, do you ever feel nervous performing? Like, how do you deal with that?
I did at the beginning, the early days, most definitely. I think anyone who does this for a living and tells you they've never felt nervous is just lying. Like, it's, everyone does. And the more you do it, the more you become accustomed to dealing with that energy. And it becomes an excitement as opposed to a fear. So you're not scared no more. You know what to do. Like, you can handle any situation. You know how to combat nerves. You know how to combat an awkward silence. Sometimes the audience is very reticent, is very inward, and they don't give you nothing back. So you have to somehow create your own energy. But it's all about experience and about learning. And sometimes it's fine to just be a bit flat and just to read. You don't have to always be this, hey, kind of, you know, entertainer. Sometimes you can just read.
So, like, what's your writing process? Like, when do you find you write at your best?
When I have time and space. Those two things for me are the catalyst, I find. When I have a lot on my mind, in other words, when I feel very pressured, I've got to write an email, I've got a meeting, I've got to go to here, I've got to be... Nothing comes out. But when I have time, you know, like, it's expansive. I feel I could write and write and write and write, which is kind of what happens, you know, like, when writers begin their career, they've usually got nothing really happening, so they've got all the time in the world, whereas the more your work becomes, it reaches a certain level of prominence, then more people want to know you, and you have less time to actually write, because your diary and your days are just filled up with other things. I like to constantly keep trying new things out, finding new ways to say things that I'm passionate about or interested in. I think that's kind of, that's how you keep going. You never really want to write the same poem twice. And if you start feeling there's a formula to the way in which you're working, I do everything that I can to run the other way and try and find the antithesis of that. So... yeah, that's all it is. It's just, you know, challenging yourself and reading other writers and thinking, oh, that's amazing, and then trying to unpack that poem and realise why is it amazing, why did that work, and looking at nuance and looking at the ways in which language can be more subtle and provocative rather than telling, you know.
I personally, myself, I listen to some of your work, and I really like This Is Not a Poem.
Oh, yeah.
And I think your work is really driven by the issues of the world.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, out there. So like, how do you view the world as it is today?
It depends on what angle you're coming from. It's not. I don't think it's sensible to say that it's all doom and gloom, because we're right here and in a very pleasant setting, having this very amicable conversation. So I think that, depending on the context of where you place things, it can be, obviously, if it's Basra or Aleppo or something like that, then yeah, things are bad, things are very bad. But, you know, reality is not one thing, it's multiple things. So I think there's a lot of good in the world, and there's also a lot of bad. And it's about using the position that we have, the privilege, the fortune, the education, the resources, to try and do our bit in rectifying, trying to deal with some of these wider issues that sometimes are actually have nothing to do with us, and our immediate reality is not problematic at all, but other people's are. And that's where I find that I kind of, that's where I enjoy, or I feel excited to work in, is in that space.
So like, I realised you have a particular interest in race and humanity. So where does the interest come from? Do you teach it yourself, or is it like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a whole load of things, you know, like, as a person of colour living in the UK, you know, you grew up experiencing a certain level of prejudice, and then people that were obviously darker than me would experience more of a prejudice, and then working out, you know, what white privilege was, coming from an island that is very mixed up with a lot of different people that look a load of different ways, and then trying to work out where I fit in into that equation. So I think identity politics and the politics of belonging.
I don't think you have to sort of fit yourself into
it. No, but you're right, you don't. But unfortunately, people will always say to me, where are you from? All the time. Like, people want to place me. So from a young age, I was always being asked where I was from. And that in itself created a kind of neurosis. Like, my white friends or my black friends never got asked that. People just, all right, you're white and you're black. Whereas with me, it was like, what are you? Are you this? Are you Italian? Are you Moroccan? Are you Algerian? Like, who are you? Where are you? And to be honest, I'm all of those things. And I think kind of having that in your physiognomy makes you want to look at these things in a much more thorough way, and that obviously opens up the discussion around white supremacy and racism and how it affects people of different hues, and that's really what's what drove it. And then it was, you know, the education and the way in which we learn about each other and the, I guess, the misinformation that surrounds different cultures when it's driven from a very particular angle.
Have you, like, ever doubted your ability to become who you are today?
Or... Every day. Yeah. Every day you doubt. It's a constant battle of doubt and then having to let go. You know, just not thinking too much about you and thinking about everything else. Like, I think that's where if I dwell too much on me and I become too self-absorbed, I'll choke myself. So it's important to just say you're very small in this massive sphere, and with that knowledge I feel comfortable, and I'm like, it doesn't even matter, like, I'm not important. What's important, the message, the art, the people, the shows, the audience, that's what's important. People's feelings, people's livelihood, people's welfare, people's state of mind. That's what's important. Not, oh, I don't like this poem because, oh, it's not, you know, I wanted it to be more like that, but it ended up being more like this. I didn't really, so all that stuff. Yeah.
Do you think poetry's kind of changed or shaped that view?
Oh, the view that I hold. Yeah, I mean, I think I read a lot of poems that I'm very taken back by, and I just think this is amazing. And obviously when you're impressed by someone's work, you start to look at yourself in a very critical way, because you think, oh, I must be rubbish. I don't know how I've even managed to come this far. And, you know, and it can get very, very kind of, you can berate yourself and put yourself down. And so I just see things for what they are and think everyone is on a particular journey and they're moving in a particular way. And I like that. I like the fact that next year I'm going to be someone else, and the year after that I'll be someone else. And the fact that I'm not fixed, again, feels quite liberating, you know. There is no such thing as I. That in itself is a powerful thought. Gives you a lot of freedom.
What for you does poetry do that other word-based communication?
Poetry is like a multi-dimensional experience. It tantalizes all these different senses, from the linguistic to the intellectual to the imaginary to the musical. Like, all these different sides of us are being stimulated, and I think that's, there's no other art form really that I can get that from, and that's why, you know, when I read a poem, sometimes it feels like maths, it's arithmetic, but it's an arithmetic that I want to work out, whereas when you give me 2 + 2 or you're talking about trigonometry, I'm not interested, I don't want to work out, I don't care, whereas this is a form of arithmetic that I want to try and crack, and that's how I've come to see a good poem, you know.
What poems would that include?
Oh man, we need a month for that one. There's loads, man. Like, there's so many writers that I couldn't, you know, it would just be me just saying names. It wouldn't mean anything. They're just people that I've read over the years, from the people in the British canon through to Middle Eastern writers, Asian writers, Caribbean writers, African writers, European, like all the way through, that just work really, really well. And they manage to embrace and embody the time in which they're writing in a very authentic and innovative way. I think for me that's what's important. Like, I like to feel that I'm in that time, you know. Like, I sometimes you meet people now that write in Shakespearean English, and I'm just, I don't understand. Like, that's 500 years. Like, yeah, right. But they kind of feel there's a gravitas to writing in that particular register that I think it's a bit dated, man. Like, we've got language that we can use now. Embrace it.
Exploration,
right.
So, what advice would you give to, like, young people who are trying to develop their writing and, you know, get out there?
I think really it's just, there's two things that have to be incorporated. The first one is reading, which is really important to read. Like, forget YouTube and MTV and whatever else. Like, listening to stuff is just, you need to read. You need to open, it's like, you know what I see? When you open up a car and you look at the engine inside, that's what reading a poem feels like. Whereas when you listen to it, it's like you're just looking at the car move past, but you don't actually know what's inside. Whereas when you're faced with the piece, it's an aesthetic and a kinesthetic experience both happening. You can't appreciate that on the stage. So I think first and foremost, to work out what you like, the poetry that you enjoy, and the poetry that you don't enjoy, and then ask yourself why. Why don't I like this poem? What is it about this that puts me off? And slowly, slowly, you start working your way into a particular style of writing that you really do enjoy. And then if you need to perform, open mics. And don't be scared of being scared, because a lot of people are. And I think that's where they go wrong. And they think, oh, I was too nervous. The paper was shaking and my mouth was dry, like peanut butter. I couldn't talk. But I think that's part of the journey, you know, being scared and then overcoming that fear and then having people say, oh, well done, I really like that, is the first step to moving towards a place of enjoying it. And eventually you do. Everyone does.